Attention, call speed. Public service announcement.
Hello there. Just before the programme starts, a little bit of information for you. You may not have noticed that the last two episodes of Gareth Jones on Speed have been bonus video episodes. Now, your current podcatcher probably won't show you the video. So if you would like to see what you've been missing out on, go to either GarethJones.tv and view them there, or even better, go to my YouTube channel and you'll find a playlist of Gareth Jones on Speed video episodes. You'll see them there. Episodes 66 and 67 have been published recently. Yeah, thank you very much indeed. Please, please leave messages, hit subscribe, hit like, all that nonsense. It will only help your favourite podcast. And here's an audio episode now.
This has been a Gareth Jones on Speed public service announcement.
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, and he's Alex Goy.
Hi.
Now, we may or may not be joined by Zog at some point during this broadcast. He's a bit under the weather. He's got this awful chest thing that seems to be going around.
There is a plague flying about these parts, Mr. J. There is a horrible plague that's taking people down left, right and centre, and it's grim and it's gross. And I read another thing this morning about how the norovirus is coming back for a second wave, which means...
Brilliant.
Yeah,
that's great.
Love that.
Yeah, norovirus, second season, you know, the difficult second season.
It'll be difficult for a few people, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, as you know, I've mentioned this before, I've just spent the last couple of months watching The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really very much about our fears of the breakdown of society and our fears of the other and health fears and all that. I mean, it's changed my mindset. I go out walking every Saturday with my pals. We go to what used to be called Snowdonia briefly.
Yes.
Eruri. We go walking, and I call us the Walking Dead. That's the name of our group. We are. I'm very worried about zombies coming over the hill. They could be zombies. So I'm prepared for it. I'm prepared for the norovirus.
Hooray!
I hope Zog is. Hey, you've managed to avoid illness, and you've done some nice stuff, right?
I've been doing nice things. I haven't managed to avoid illness. I was on a job in Barcelona last week, Kia's EV Day. Lots of new EVs unveiled. The EV4 hatch looks great. The sedan looks a bit weird. The PV5 modular commercial vehicle thing, that looks really cool. You can do lots of stuff with it. The wheelchair accessible one is really cool as well because it opens onto the pavement, not out of the back of the vehicle, which is just better all round.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The EV2 concept was great, but it was held in a sort of bullfighting ring about an hour outside of Barcelona.
Wow.
I shit you not. And there were about 200 journos there and God knows how many Kia staff and event staff running it. Sorry, my kitten is... she's on heat at the moment, so just screaming at the door. It's really fun.
Don't worry, Seamus will be joining us for a howl presently, I'm sure, at my end.
But yes, there were lots of people there, and if you made it out without some sort of horrible hacking cough and feeling like death, I'd be very surprised. I spent most of last week feeling a little under the weather.
You went to the new EV super spreader event.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did indeed.
And you missed a pun opportunity there as well. You said no shit, it should have been no bullshit because you're in a bull ring.
Yeah,
see,
good.
Local radio,
local radio.
Well, I'm glad you survived. Interesting vehicle, right?
Well, the Kia stuff, yeah. I mean, at the moment, the stuff they've unveiled is like basic powertrain, basic stats, the EV4, I think that's going to be like the EV to get. But I've been driving a far more interesting EV. I've actually been driving it today, in fact. So, you know, the time couldn't be better for Zog to be ill. How do you feel about modern Maserati?
I love modern Maserati. I've always loved Maserati. I nearly bought a bi-turbo. Many years ago, I had a pal who had one. I mean, all sorts of trouble, but so beautiful.
Yeah.
And just, of course, the heritage and the name, you're immediately suckered by that. You can't be.
Mm.
And Maserati today, I mean, the sporting heritage, all the cliches, all that. Culturally, Maserati is like, oh, yes, you've heard of Ferrari, but, of course, Maserati is better.
Well, that's the sort of thing that I need to square away, because
yeah, Because it ain't really, it's sub-Ferrari now,
no,
isn't
it's,
it?
No, it's sub-Ferrari. They're very posh, they're very nice, but it's more the Bentley to Ferrari's Rolls-Royce.
Right, sporting, yeah, and elitist, yeah.
Well, yeah, but the cars we drove today, they basically said, come down, we've bought the fleet, bar a couple that had been run into or crashed. So I had to go in the Grecale, which is the small SUV or the current entry-level thing, and they have the Modena, which is the hybrid, and then the Trofeo, which has all the power and all that, and I only had to go in the Modena of that, and it was nice. The ride was awful, but it was pleasant, and it had the right bells and whistles, and it made a sort of rorty noise. I had to go in the MC20, but it was very narrow roads in Surrey, and I was terrified, so I did something else with that. But the most interesting car of the day was the new Gran Turismo, but not the V6 one, because the V6 one's got like 600,000 million horsepower. I had to go in the Folgore, which, if you speak Italian, you'll know means lightning. Or something like that. It's electric.
And it is the only four-door electric convertible in the universe, isn't it?
It's two-door, four seats. You can get the convertible.
Sorry, did I say four-door?
You said four-door,
I meant four-seat.
Yes, it's four-seat. I think there are more of those coming in various sort of configurations and from various people. But I found it really fascinating, to be honest, because it's a big thing, which means it can hide a lot of batteries. So it's 92.5 kilowatt-hours of battery hiding underneath it. It's got three motors, so it's got 751 horsepower and 996
three motors, foot. Two on the rear, one on the front.
I believe so, yes. I wasn't
paying
attention.
That's just showing off, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, it's a lot. They say it'll do 200 miles an hour, and having stamped on it a bit, I can believe it. The range is allegedly 275 miles. I didn't see that, but I had half an hour, 40 minutes to roll around in it. Thing is, I got in it expecting... And I don't know about you, but the idea of an EV Maserati Gran Turismo, you know, for me, if you're going into that strata, the EV should be a big, luxurious SUV, big, comfy, squishy thing, you know, like the Rolls Spectre, like whatever Bentley's bringing out.
Yeah.
Like, who else does big EV SUVs? Anyway, it's an SUV platform. EV itself, I always thought, loaned itself, in that strata at least, to big, squishy, comfy. But actually, as a GT, even with its 200-odd mile range, I mean, they'll recharge at 270 kilowatts, so actually you can get a lot of that energy back quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
It worked really well. Because a GT is supposed to be relaxing, it's supposed to be cruisy. And even though I was on narrow, narrow Surrey roads and puckering every time something came towards me, it went like the clappers, but it was quiet, it was relaxed. At no point during my drive did I feel urgent, did I feel angry, which is what a lot like one of those, the old generation Gran Turismo with a V8 in it, sounded
beautiful.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
With that comes anger and with that comes aggression.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it was just a nice way to cruise around the countryside and have a look and smell the smells and see the sights and wave at people and try not to get rear-ended by people racing you.
I'm reminded today, going round the roundabout here in Conwy, I followed a Lotus Electra.
Oh, yeah.
Nice to see one on the roads up here in Wales. Mm. You see them in London, but you don't generally
see
them.
One this morning, actually, and the guy going through 20-mile-an-hour traffic next to a school had the spoiler up at the back, and it looks really weird with the spoiler up, especially at 0 miles
but
an hour.
But that's a similar ethic, you'd say, kind of sporting but quiet.
Yeah, the thing about the Electra is that it's unashamedly an SUV.
Yeah.
So it is a big lumper car, but there's loads of space in it. There's room in the back. There's all the sort of mod cons. Same with the, not Emira, the Emeya, the sedan, the saloon. Again, loads of space in it. That's kind of similar to this. It's got a more GT vibe to it. But it took me by surprise. I hadn't expected to be as taken with it as I was. I hadn't expected to enjoy it as much as I did. Because it was just a really pleasant experience.
Do you know why it's called the Folgore? I'm just reasoning it through.
It's the Italian for lightning.
Yeah. But no thunder.
Hey!
It's not called thunder. It's called lightning.
Yeah,
you know, that's electric.
So all the EVs in the lineup will be Folgoris. There'll be I think there's a Folgori Grecale and there's a Folgori Grand Cabrio as well. So you can have the electric experience without a roof.
That's what I was talking about earlier on when I said it's the only 4-seat 2-door convertible.
I think it's really cool. I get it. I think there's going to be a load of people who go, oh, Maserati should have a V8 and it should be all dramatic and stuff. But actually...
Listen, we hear this all the time. You know, oh, no, a Ford Caprice got to be a little coupe built in the 70s. Yeah, it was. That's what a Ford Capri was then.
Yes.
Now, a Ford Capri is this.
I mean,
What you're talking about is stuff that happened 40 or 50 years ago. Quite a lot has changed in the world since then.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's my response to those people.
Attitudes towards women and disease and vaccinations have changed since the Capri went out of production. In fact, the year the Capri went out of production, I was born. And I'm very different from who I was
when you were born.
When I was born. I'm not a small squeaky thing now. I'm taller and angrier.
Sorry, that was
a bit mean.
It was literally a cheap shot, which I didn't mean.
That's fine. It's only me. It's just been a really long day, so you can just punch me while I'm down.
Oh.
A long day. Hang on, but it's been a long day driving Maserati, so maybe I should get back in my box and shut up.
Does it make any syntho sound? It must do some
there,
kind.
There were some, again. It was a 40-minute squirt, really, because it was, you know, there were lots of people there and everyone wanted to have a go, and there were more people than there were cars. It made some noises. I mean, I put it in sport mode. The thing is, like, you put it into sport mode and the suspension gets all hard, and then it becomes really rubbish because it's really urgent, but then the ride's really bouncy and horrible because it's on British roads. But you can press the suspension button, have the urgent, all the power, all at once kind of feel to it, but you don't get your spine ripped to shreds. Honestly, I was so surprised about how much I liked it and how much I kind of got it after that quick go. I think for cars like that, EV works so well. There will be the people going, well, I want a V8 and I want to be able to stop and refuel the car and then keep going. But you know what? After 200, 250 miles, especially in UK traffic, I quite need a sit down and a wee. So if I can plug it in for 30 minutes and get 80% of charge, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
That works for me. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And it looks really good as well.
Picking up what you said there about, you know, this works as an EV or this works for EVs. I think EVs can work in any class. They work as micro city cars. They work as little urban hatchbacks. They, you know, short journey, 100-mile hatchbacks. And if you can afford it, a big saloon or an EV, that also works as an EV. Sports cars can work as an EV. Yes, there are compromises because of the weight, but it's the kind of compromises that people like Range Rover have been working with for years, and Porsche. They've been making massive overweight vehicles that handle and drive like they really shouldn't, given the laws of physics.
Yes.
Using internal combustion engine cars for years. So, yeah, of course, that means that you can do it with EVs too.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of prejudice in this world, and people are prejudiced against EVs.
They are,
aren't they?
It will be a bit for that market, for that amount of money. So let me just have a look at how much it is.
Do you want to take a guess?
Go on, have a guess.
Between £94,000 and £105,000.
Much, much higher.
Get out, really.
£179,950.
Oh, my trousers.
At that point, it becomes it's quite a lot of money, or at least that's what the one that Car Magazine drove. My notes are hidden far, far away in a bag.
Yeah,
I rushed to get here. So, yeah, it's a lot of money. And for that money, you can have a lot of Porsche 911, and Porsche 911s are good, and they also have that whole thing of not being a Maserati. And the problem the Maseratis have is that, you know, things go a bit weird, or they don't have the reliability thing. You have to really want a Maserati, whereas you can just go, yeah, I've got a Porsche, and it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like buying an Alfa Romeo Giulietta and someone else buys a Golf. Like, you have to really want the Alfa, because a Golf will do everything that'll do probably better.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to really want it.
Yeah.
It's got to be an emotional decision rather than a rational decision, which maybe Maserati would welcome, you know, la emotion, you know, il passione. It's kind of written into it, isn't it? You've got to want this car. It ain't going to be perfect, but it's going to be okay, you know. It'll be the car you want, you'll be happy
with
it. It's like that rule Richard Porter applies. You know this, you know?
What's his Porter's law?
It's a good one, this. If anyone phones you up and said, oh, I want to buy a car. So what do you want? Oh, I want a Honda Civic. All right, yeah. Get a Honda Civic. Don't say to him, oh, no, don't get a Honda Civic. Get yourself a Lancia Monte Carlo or something completely different, right? Because they won't be happy. Tell them, right, get a good one.
Yeah,
right?
Get a good one. Get this one.
Get one with as much detail as you can.
Whenever my mates ask me, because we're of that age where, you know, people are having second children or they're having their first and they were, right, okay, we need a sort of small family car. I always go, just buy a Golf. It's all the car you'll ever actually need. Just buy a Golf. And I will never forget this. One of the first times it happened, it's an old uni friend and her husband. They were like, oh, right, Alex, we need to talk to you because, you know, child number one's on the way and we need to get, like, we're thinking about getting a car. I was like, right, buy a Golf. And they went, well, you know, we think of a small SUV. And I was like, all right, well, get a Tiguan then, or get a Skoda Kodiaq, or basically any one of those things that are basically a Golf on stilts. And I didn't mention the Seat Ateca, and they went, well, we've been thinking about the Seat Ateca. And I went, how good's the deal you've got? Because it's basically the same, but like some of the materials aren't quite as good, and it won't hold its value as well. But how good's the deal? Because it is essentially the same thing.
Yeah, man.
And they went, oh, it's a really good deal. I was like, you signed it already, haven't you? And they went, yeah. Then why are you asking me?
Yeah,
it
really.
Matter.
After the event, they wanted endorsements of their decision, and when they realised it wasn't going to be what they hoped, you'd say, like, that was knacking it. But that was Richard's point. You know, let people buy the car they want to buy. They'll be happy with it. So if you want to buy a Maserati rather than a Porsche, you'll be happy with
buy
it.
Buy the car.
Even if it loses 90% of its value in 4 years or doesn't work every time.
Yeah.
It will be a Maserati.
Yeah, you'll have a Maserati. I mean, says the man who bought an Aston Martin. So
there you go.
I could have bought a 911, should have bought a 911. Didn't.
Bless you for not buying a 911, for getting an Aston Martin. That's a wonderful thing to do. Good lad.
We shall try. We try.
Hey, we're going to be able to read about your thoughts on the Maserati Gran Turismo Folgore.
Yes, well, some further thoughts on electrification and GT cars, and some further thoughts on what to do when you have a Maserati MC20 for half an hour. Probably on the Driven website, driven.site at some point, but it's... I've got another job on tomorrow and then maybe some time on Wednesday and then another job on Thursday. Actually, no, I'm getting the Morgan out of hibernation on Thursday. So it's going to be, hopefully, not a rainy day.
I'm glad you are a busy boy.
Ish.
That's beautiful. And I thank you for coming in at short notice to help me talk about stuff on the programme when I realise I may not last even the day.
Well,
it's
I shall do a rain dance for him.
Yeah, man.
A healing rain dance, and hopefully the dampness will coax the evil spirit from his body and he'll be bright and bouncing, able to talk about Formula One tomorrow. Because I gather that the Grand Prix is beginning again.
They're having one of those Grand Prix.
Excellent.
England's greatest motor racing heroes now racing around the world against Johnny Farrell.
Well, you know, I went to the F1 75 launch.
I didn't know you were there.
Did you not? Oh, yeah, I went to it. So unexpected plot twist. Yeah, I went. The lovely folk at Hot Wheels, I am holding a Hot Wheel and another Hot Wheel.
Show me one of them. Anyone.
Would you like the Vantage AMR race car? Or would you like the Lotus Emira? Or not one, but two Morgan Super 3s?
No, God, that's beautiful.
Oh, both colours.
I've got, I think, it's hard to say exactly what that is, but it's...
That's a Lotus.
It looks like a Lotus. It's got a bit of a BRM quality about it as well.
Mm.
I remember owning that when I was a kid, and my mate Phil bought me this for Christmas. It's like an original late 60s die-cast model. I heard that.
Lotus Type 49, maybe?
It looks like it, doesn't it? But it's a bit cruder. It's not quite a model. It's a bit... Underneath, I can't read what it says. I don't think it says anything that it's useful. But yeah, you've got to have a car nearby.
Yeah.
Love your Vantage GTE.
Oh, yeah, that was ace. Is it God bless the Saints.
Which one is that?
It's the AMR GTE race car, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, the F-175 thing. So it was a bit of a... They said, oh, do you want to come? And I was like, so long as I'm not stealing... Hello, Kim. So long as I'm not stealing the seat from someone who, you know, really, really wants to go there. No, swing by. I don't know if you watched the live stream. It was an odd event.
I did. I loved it. It was hilarious. It felt like the Eurovision Song Contest, but without pop songs.
Yes. I mean, the White Horse
Joke... Well, there were some.
The thing is, like, I spoke to some people about it afterwards, and they were like, oh, the jokes were rubbish. Or it was like, but in that room...
Jokes are great. In that the jokes room, are the best.
Everyone who was there wanted to be there. They were there to see
their
favourite drivers, their favourite teams. You know, I'm not sure who got a bigger boo, the FIA logo or Christian Horner.
That was funny, wasn't
one
it?
One of the two. But the moment they mentioned Ferrari, every time Lewis Hamilton was mentioned, every time he appeared on the screen and when he appeared on the stage, the O2 went absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
It was incredible. The love for that man in that room was just something else. I mean, when McLaren came out, everyone was very excited because British team, British this, British that, the Constructors' Championship, which they kind of lent on quite heavily. They're like, oh, yeah, we're F1 world champions. And we're like, Sort of.
Yeah. Well, you are, but no one really cares. Yeah.
Not really. But yeah, again, everyone went nuts for them because of British kitten. Do be quiet, love. I'm busy. Stop meowing. Come here. All right, ignore me, good girl. I think some of the reaction it got on the outside was unfair. Oh, hello. Hello, love.
Hello, Otter. Kitten. Hello, Otter.
Otter the kitten.
Seamus is the other side.
She just came and did a flying leap at me.
Watch out! Don't let her claw your microphone and create static.
But no, it was a very cool thing. I was very lucky to be there.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed watching it on TV. It was kind of like a competition, as each reveal of each of the cars was like a better and better performance. Like, who's going to do the coolest one? I thought the Aston Martin one was very good.
Yeah, the Aston one was very cool. I mean, I asked the Aston comms guys how it all worked, because obviously each time the car was wheeled out, they didn't move under their own steam for obvious reasons. Some of them were lift on the sort of plinth in the middle of the stage. Some of them rotated. Some of them just sat there. And I was like, so what's the deal here? What do you get? Are you told what you can do and what you can't do, or X, Y, Z? Anyway, basically, we've got 7 minutes to fill as we see fit. So they did the song and dance, did the Bond thing. Yeah. They had the team. They had the drivers sort of in the audience. There was a little bit of interview, but not a lot. The Red Bull one I really liked because it was this gorgeous celebration of car culture. I'm not sure it translated as well outside, because we had so it was that big screen that draped over the stage that was a sort of curtain and sort of wasn't. So we saw all of it.
Yeah.
And the floor lit up of the stage. So when there was the guys in the chicken shop, the floor of the stage was that chicken shop tile you get.
Yeah.
Unmistakable grotty chicken shack.
Yeah.
Sort of beige tile. Kitten, sorry Gareth. Stop that silly person. There's no boy cats. You're not getting any. I love you, but shush. It was just really nicely put together and really well done. And the fact they were like, whether you're a weekend hero, whether you're at the track all the time, whether you're obsessed with F1, this is for you. And the film they had encompassed so many different bits of car culture, you know, all the way from, you know, the guys at the BMWs, the guys wrenching on the drift cars, you know, Merlin up in Brentford, who I think was driving my mate's NSX, I'm not sure.
Yeah, where all these cars converge, don't they?
Yeah, they all converged onto the lorry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was the party atmosphere as they all came in. And it was just really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
I really liked that. Mani Chihuahua doing the V-birth thing.
You talking about the guy who wrote the Formula One thing?
No, that was the man from Alpine, wasn't it?
Yeah, he came in
doing
DJ.
The DJ set.
And
he was very into that.
I think it killed it. Like, nothing really happened. The tune was fine, but you don't want to watch a man turning a phase button or a tone modifier,
I'm talking about Mani Chihuahua, the comedian. He did the sort of vox pop about, you know who Toro Rosso, what Toro Rosso's called now? The Virgin, the Visa, Red Bull, Cash App, or Viber, or I can't remember what it is now. He was really good anyway. And yeah, it was a really solid, really strong 2 hours. I only nipped out for a wee when the Country Music Act came on because I had no idea who he was and I didn't care.
I'm so glad you were there. If I didn't know you were going, I'd ask you to take a Zoom along and record a few minutes.
I should have done, but I was already in town.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about anything. I was like, oh shit, I should probably get my act together and go to the O2 now, and off I toddled.
Actually, here's the thing. Yeah, that was aimed at you, Alex, because they say that the whole reason for the existence of F175 was for people who aren't fans of Formula One, people who aren't knowledgeable, or the new type of fans.
Yeah, I don't think it was specifically aimed at me. I think it was aimed, it was aimed more at kind of the, I hate to say, oh, the explosion in this Drive to Survive, but there's a lot of people that got into it because of that.
Of course.
And there are people that have been drawn into the sport because of those people. The evening, I think, it was a really nice balance between, here's Jack Whitehall telling a funny joke about Flavia Briatore, here's Jack Whitehall saying a funny pun about a man from Aston Martin, but also here's some footage of Murray Walker, here's some footage of, like, most amazing races that have happened over the 75 years. And I think the idea was to kind of bring everyone up to speed. It was a very self-aware event.
Yes, that's very true. It was very self-aware. The fact that Jack could make those jokes. Mm. Can you believe there's someone called Mike Crack? You know, I mean, yeah, we know, man, right? But it's great.
But also, I think there was a little bit of it that was like, this is going to piss off some people who think it's their sport. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'm often sort of quite comedically vocal about how odd I find it. And it's that kind of weird ownership some people have over it. It's like, this is our sport. Yeah. It's for us. Brundle did the McLaren interview at the end. I think it was Brundle and McLaren. And what he was saying was like, oh, well, they, you know, it's our sport. And I don't like it when people say that. Because it should be for everyone, it should be inclusive. So the fact that it knew it wasn't for the our sport people, but it was in fact for the, all right, well, I quite like Max Verstappen, or I quite like Lewis Hamilton, let's watch that. Yeah. And it was live streamed and it was free for all, apart from for the people, obviously, who paid to be there. But the people who paid to be there absolutely loved it. As I was leaving the O2, there was not one single person who was like, oh, that was a bit rubbish.
Uh-huh. It was a fan experience, bizarrely. Even if it was aimed at the new fans, or people who haven't been fans until recently, their first contact with it is pretty spectacular and wonderful. And I have no problems with it whatsoever. Now, I refer to Formula One, or all of motorsport, as my sport. That's my sport. Yeah. When new people come to it, they go, oh, great, it's validation of what I like. That, you see, it's great, isn't it? Isn't it great? And I feel it as a sharing thing, but that's generally me.
I don't have the issue with it, my sport, because, you know, it's your sport, it's what you like. Yeah. There are people who view football as their sport, but it's the
you're not allowed to have my sport vibe.
It's the possessiveness of our sport. Yeah, yeah. It kind of feels like it's excluding people who don't get it. And I understand why, because it's so easy for people to have a pop. But I think it helped bridge the gap between more experienced fans and new ones. And admittedly, look, at its very base, it was a night where teams spent a lot of money showing off some stickers.
It's what happens.
That's what it was. Loads of individual events. It was one big event. Yeah. There were previews around it, whatever. But it turned it into a show, and it brought the F1 circus a little closer to the mortals this time. And that's important for our sport.
I think it should tour like the Eurovision Song Contest. You know, the winning nation gets to host. Oh, it's always going to be Britain. Sorry.
Yes, it is. Yeah, well, it might be Italy this year. I'll be paying attention. When's Australia? A couple of weeks?
Yes, 2 weeks, yes. Well, a week on Saturday. What's the date? The 14th? I lose the track.
The 15th, I shall be in a pub drinking.
It's soon.
So it'll be the 16th in that case. Yeah. And it'll be Australia, so I might still be awake.
Yeah, actually. Listen, here's a thought, final thought. Having been to that launch, persuaded you in any way to be more aware of Formula One, or do you still, no, that's fine, let people do it?
I'll always be aware of it, and I'll always, you know, it's always going to be part of my life and my circles and all that, you know. When the races are on, I don't have Sky Sports because I spend enough on various streaming services already. I don't need another thing because it would be Sky Sports for F1, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And I football can be your sport. I don't honestly could give less of a shit about football. But I'm always aware of it, and I always follow it on Twitter when it's going off. So I always know what happens. Mm. It's just normally I'm asleep. Mm-hmm. 'cause it's on a Sunday afternoon, and I don't have children. And I'm normally either out and about or napping. It's great.
Hey, I often nap during the Grand Prix. That doesn't mean they're boring. It means I've overexcited myself at
they're
the start.
They're our naps. They're our naps.
Alex, love you, man. Great to talk to you. Thank you for your time. I'm hoping Zog's alive. We'll find out.
Very welcome. Get well soon, Zog. Bye.
Bye, Alex. I'm very pleased to say that my mucker has come out of his sick bed to talk Formula One. Zog, you are a hero. Yeah.
No, I'm just a slightly snivelly, coughy, slightly ill. That's all. I'm definitely not a hero. Just a bit under the weather.
Ah, well, hey, let's push through this then, because I don't want you to have to sit there and cough your guts up every three laps, as it were.
Appreciate
How
that.
Much did you enjoy watching testing? Did you watch it or just read the stats?
I watched a fair bit of it. I mean, it was great to get the first experience of this year's cars out on track and to get a feeling that the new season is almost upon us. I can't say it was really all that exciting. And I'm not sure we really learned all that much. There's the usual caveat. It's only testing. How much do you really know from those 3 days of pre-season running when you're not really quite sure what all the teams are doing? Are they trying to go as fast as possible, or are they, you know, running with a heavier fuel load to see how the car works under those conditions? Are they, you know, you just don't know exactly what's going on. But my takeaway from it at the end was, you know, the top four teams are still the top four teams.
Yeah.
Any of them could take race wins, certainly at the start of the season. McLaren are probably the quickest of the four,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, continuing from where we left off at the end of last season.
I want to make a point about that.
Yeah, go on.
I looked into it. I thought, I wonder, in the entire history of F1, how often the winning constructor from the previous season wins the first race, a car from that team wins the first race of the following season. Right, so, you know,
yeah.
McLaren were champions team-wise last year. How does that influence, you know, statistically their chances of winning the first race when we get to Australia? And of the 75 years, I think 13 occasions were won by constructors from the previous year.
Only about one in six, yeah.
Sorry, 15, not 13, 15, so a 20% chance.
Yes, one in five, yes, one in five.
Beg your pardon, yeah. There are periods where Ferrari did it multiple times, Tyrrell, March, Lotus, of course, you know, the great names, Red Bull did it, Mercedes did it, and Red Bull did it most recently. So it'd be interesting, does this mean, you know, if you're the people who calculates the betting odds for a team, does this make it less likely or more likely that McLaren, Norris or Piastri could win the first race?
Well, first of all, just as a comment on that, that's a lower figure than I'd have expected. You know,
surprising, isn't it?
That is surprising that it's as low as 20%. But that aside, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, this year can be compared, you know, all that comfortably to all of the past seasons. There's no significant change in regulations from last year to this year. Some of the teams are running almost exactly the same chassis as they were last year. You know, the changes are minimal.
Nuanced.
Yeah. So you would expect this year on that basis to be much more similar to the end of last year than has been the trend in the past.
The concern I have is that the most exciting story to come out of testing this year The biggest innovation, you know, everyone's doing to one degree or another a certain amount of aero elasticity. But the big talk is about McLaren, the positioning of the steering arms
and the track
rods.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the
innovative story.
Yeah.
And there's been a bit of chat about the a couple of little holes that Aston drilled in the at the back of the cockpit. Yeah, that's got everyone very excited. Yeah.
Where are the fan cars? Where are the six wheel cars? Where are the cars that look like lobsters?
I know. Excuse me. Yeah, that says a lot about just how little things have changed and how little of substance there is to get excited about.
Yeah.
I would have loved it if Ferrari appeared to have taken a significant step forward. That doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah. It's only testing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to see what actually happens when we actually get the first race, when we've got some actual proper competitive action and how things shake out then. And my head says it's going to be Lando and McLaren leading the way.
I think you're right. If you look at the raw figures, right, and it's only testing, the raw figures, the fastest lap was Carlos Sainz in a Williams, 1:29.348. Behind him, Lewis Hamilton, Ferrari, 1:29.379. Then third, Charles Leclerc. Fourth, George Russell. Fifth, Max Verstappen. Sixth, Alex Albon. Now, that's interesting. Seventh, Andrea Kimi Antonelli. Eighth, Oscar Piastri. Ninth, Pierre Gasly. Tenth, Lance Stroll. Now, most of those times were done earlier on in the weekend where conditions were markedly different to how they were, and that doesn't really tell you anything. There seems, however, to be a general consensus that Williams are the only team who have really moved out the mid-order into the top end, or have made a bigger leap than anyone else, you could say.
Yeah, I think that is true. They should at least have the edge on Alpine. I mean, Sainz himself said, you know, don't expect podiums from us this year. You know, and he's saying that, as you say, with the fastest lap in testing in his pocket, but he knows how significant or not that time is. It is encouraging that Williams have taken a step forward. I'm really glad they have. There does seem to be something there, but they're not going to be at the sharp end.
What they do have this year is an innovation, and that is two perfectly good drivers in the car. It's been a while since we've had that at Williams, well, apart from the brief period where Colapinto was alongside Albon. This year, you've got Sainz and Albon. Now, Williams have finally got experienced, reliable, non-pay drivers, and that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, they've got two really solid drivers there, as you say, first time for a few years. The momentum that James Vowles has been putting into the team driving forward is you know, continuing, appears to be continuing. Let's hope that carries on building through the year and that we see some solid results from them. Maybe Sainz is sandbagging, maybe he's being a little bit cautious, then maybe a podium would be possible at the end of the year if they make the right kind of improvements, but you know, we shouldn't be too optimistic. But one other takeaway which I had, this is just, not so much on a performance side, but what a lovely guy Gabriel Bortoleto is. What an absolutely super chap.
Super chap, yeah. I think they're all interesting. Ollie Bearman strikes me as being the next George Russell. He's like popped out of the manufacturing school of, oh, well, media training is quite a posh kid, you know, but he sounds like that when he's talking. And it's kind of, oh, gosh, my Formula One, that's great. And actually, all the rookies, they're not really rookies, they're Formula One rookies, performed rather well. There were no great disasters, were there, during testing from any of them?
No, like you say, the rookies all did a solid job. The cars, you know, there was no, again, we should probably expect this given the continuity of rules, but no reliability issues. I think, you know, we usually come away from testing with at least one sort of, ooh, you know, they're looking a bit fragile, you know, this team is, you know, needs to work on, they've obviously got something that they need to look at there. No, it's, you know, no reliability issues. Everyone's looking like they can, you know, run the race distance without any issues. So that's a downside from a drama point of view, but an upside from a getting lots more racing action during the year point of view. So, yeah, well done, everybody.
The pecking order, in my interpretation at the moment, and remember, it's only testing, McLaren appear to be the quickest, then I think you've probably got Mercedes, Ferrari, Williams and Red Bull all vying for that sort of second position. And it's going to change from race to race. But I think Williams are conceivably in there, behind McLaren, behind Mercedes, but in that group, like half out of phase. It's only testing. Then you've got Alpine, then Racing Bulls, then Haas. Aston seem to be running in porridge. There was their view, wasn't it? And then Sauber, the death of Sauber, their final season, they're still at the back of the grid.
I would have put Williams definitely behind the top four.
Okay, which, yeah.
I think my top four is basically the same as yours there. Absolutely. You know, McLaren appear to have a slight edge. Mercedes and Ferrari probably about on a par.
Yeah.
Red Bull probably a little behind, but Max will make up for that and elevate the performance of that particular driver car combo. And then, I think as you get further back down, it's a little harder to really read it. But yeah, I mean, to get on something that's a bit easier to make sense of, what did you make of the F1 75 big launch event?
Well, I actually, you didn't hear it because you were in your truckle bed, but I just spoke to Alex Goy about that.
Oh, excellent. Yeah,
for the first part of the show.
Good. Oh, well, I'll be interested to hear maybe I should just listen to what the two of you had to say about it then. But
yeah.
Will they do it next year, I wonder? Will there be a similarly spectacular, enormous live event like that?
At the moment, they say no, because it was specifically to celebrate the 75th year.
Yeah.
But I have an idea about it, which I mentioned in the first half of the programme. I'm not going to repeat here, but
okay, well,
you've got to listen to the show now.
Yeah, I will. One quick thought about it was, I've got to say, I thought Jack Whitehall did actually a very good job.
Amazing.
Of fronting it, you know, of being the MC for that event. Not an easy kind of event to present in all kinds of ways, but no, I think he did a terrific job.
He was very wry. It was very self-aware, witty. I think that was great, you know. Hey, I've discussed this previously.
Good.
Hey,
okay.
Listen, right, Zog, we're going to wrap this because I know you should get some honey and lemon down here. Zog, go, enjoy, put your feet up, get warm.
Yeah, I'm going to go and have some lemon sip and lie down, I think.
Yeah, man. And I'll speak to you after the first race of the season.
Can't wait. See you, mate.
Bye, Zog. That's it from Zog. That's it from me. Like I said, I'll speak not only to Zog, but to you guys listening after the first race of the season in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share, and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Gareth Jones on Speed!